Are you okay? It's okay not to be okay. Kids Help Phone is available 24/7, so you don't have to deal with your feelings alone. You can text with a volunteer crisis responder or call a professional counselor. Visit kidshelpphone.ca for more info.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
We can save a lot of people. I mean, some of those kids are, that's real starvation stuff. I see it. And you can't fake that.
As President Trump contradicts the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, acknowledging there's real starvation in Gaza, the world's leading hunger monitor is warning the worst-case scenario of famine is currently playing out in the Gaza Strip. We'll speak to a whistleblower who worked with the U.S. and Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. He resigned after witnessing Palestinians being shot dead as they sought food at aid sites. Then to Jan Egeland, the head of the Norwegian Refugee Council, one of the largest independent aid groups in Gaza. And we go to Israel, where two leading human rights groups, B'Tselem and Physicians for Human Rights Israel, have accused Israel of committing genocide.
The report we are publishing today is one we never imagined we would have to write. But in recent months, We have been witnessing a reality that has left us no choice but to acknowledge the truth. Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli forces have shot and killed at least 62 people across the Gaza Strip since dawn today, including 19 people seeking food. The latest killings bring Gaza's official death toll since October 2023 to over 60,000, though that number is believed to be a vast undercount. Meanwhile, the world's leading hunger monitoring system warned the worst-case scenario of famine is playing out in the Gaza Strip, with widespread starvation, malnutrition, and disease driving a rise in hunger-related deaths. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification warns the only path to stopping further deaths and catastrophic human suffering is for Israel to allow for the unimpeded, large-scale flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. On Monday, Palestinians holding empty pots and pans gathered at a soup kitchen in Gaza City, hoping for a meal.
We are living in this apartment and I wish we were safe. We have mosquitoes from one side and fleas from the other side. My whole body has fleas. I can't get medicine for myself nor go get treatment. I go from soup kitchen to another to provide food for my children instead of getting treatment for myself. My small child, who is 3 years old, has pus in his leg. I can't go get him treatment because I have to provide food for him first.
The governments of Germany and Spain said Monday they'll airdrop humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip in cooperation with Jordan. But officials admitted the amount of aid they can provide pales in comparison to Gaza's starvation crisis. Meanwhile, President Trump has broken from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who declared Sunday, quote, there is no starvation in Gaza. On Monday, Trump said he'd seen images of Palestinians on TV and that, quote, those children look very hungry, unquote. Trump later described scenes of, quote, real starvation. Israel's security cabinet's considering a proposal to annex parts of the Gaza Strip. That's according to the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, which reports Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's annexation bid is part of an effort to prevent the resignation of far-right Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, who in May declared, quote, we are finally going to conquer the Gaza Strip. We are no longer afraid of the word occupation, unquote. At the United Nations, Saudi Arabia and France have opened a three-day conference aimed at recognizing Palestinian statehood as part of an effort to end Israel's assault on Gaza. Already, 147 of the UN's 193 member states recognize the state of Palestine, though not the United States nor its allies in the G7 group of powerful nations. Ahead of this week's conference, U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee mocked France's planned September recognition of Palestine as, quote, the new nation of Frankenstein. U.S. human rights defender Chris Small says he was physically assaulted in Israeli custody after he was abducted by Israeli forces who raided their Gaza-bound humanitarian aid vessel, the Handala, in international waters Saturday. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition says Smalls was choked and kicked in the legs with visible signs of violence on his neck and back, and that this level of force was not used on the other activists. Smalls was the only Black crew member of the Handala, which was carrying baby formula, diapers, food and medicine. Meanwhile, in Greece, protesters on the island of Rhodes scuffled with riot police as they were demonstrating against the war in Gaza, while an Israeli cruise ship was docked. This is one of the protesters.
The killings and the embargo that is happening in Gaza must stop. The people are starving. We demand a reaction from the rest of the world, and that Israel does not operate on the backs of NATO and the West with what it's doing right now. This is murder.
In the occupied West Bank, an Israeli settler shot and killed the Palestinian activist and teacher Oda Mohammed Halalin in a village near Hebron on Monday. He played a key role in the production of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land, which follows Palestinians in the community of Masafer Yatta as they struggle to stay on their land amidst violent attacks by Israeli settlers. Residents identified Hadalin's killer as Yinon Levy, an Israeli settler who was put on a European Union sanctions list last year for his violent attacks on Palestinians and their property. The Trump administration earlier this year lifted the Biden-era U.S. sanctions on Levy. Video appears to show him brandishing and firing a handgun at Palestinians ahead of Monday's fatal attack. Palestinian journalist and No Other Land co-director Basil Adra mourned Hadalin's killing, writing, quote, "This is how Israel erases us, one life at a time," he said. In Ukraine, Russian strikes have hit a prison in Zaporizhia, killing 17 people and wounding 42. A hospital in the Dnipro region was also hit, killing three people, including a pregnant woman. The attacks come as President Trump moved up his deadline for Russia to agree to a ceasefire deal from 50 days to about 10 or 12 days. Here in New York, a gunman wielding a semi-automatic assault rifle walked into a Midtown Manhattan skyscraper Monday evening and opened fire, killing four people before fatally turning the gun on himself. Police identified the shooter as 27-year-old Shane Tamura of Las Vegas, who reportedly drove across the U.S. to carry out the attack.
The building security camera footage shows the shooter enter the lobby, turn right, and immediately open fire on an NYPD officer. He then shoots a woman who took cover behind a pillar and proceeds through the lobby, spraying it with gunfire.
Tamura was a competitive football player who appeared to be targeting the National Football League's corporate offices. The league has confirmed one employee was critically injured. Tamura had a license to carry a concealed weapon in Nevada. He reportedly carried a suicide note stating grievances with the NFL and saying he suffered from the brain disease CTE, which is linked to head trauma. Meanwhile, in Reno, Nevada, a gunman killed three people at a casino resort Monday morning, leaving several others injured in a spray of gunfire before police officers shot him dead. Investigators are still searching for a motive. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been 254 mass shootings across the United States so far this year. A federal judge has ruled the Trump administration and Congress cannot block Planned Parenthood from receiving Medicaid payments. In its lawsuit, Planned Parenthood claimed it would have had to close nearly 200 clinics in 24 states without Medicaid funds, which would cut off care to over 1 million patients. Nearly half of Planned Parenthood's patients are on Medicaid. Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator and convicted sex trafficker, Ghislaine Maxwell, is appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn her conviction. Maxwell is claiming she's ineligible to be prosecuted due to a 2007 plea deal struck between Epstein and then Florida prosecutor Alex Acosta, whom Trump later named as labor secretary, who has then had to resign because of the Epstein scandal. Meanwhile, President Trump is looking to force Wall Street Journal owner Rupert Murdoch to give a deposition within the next 2 weeks as part of Trump's defamation lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal. Trump's seeking $10 billion after denying the Journal's report that Trump signed a birthday card to Epstein with a sexually suggestive drawing of a woman. On Monday, Trump gave new details about his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, telling reporters in Scotland he ended their friendship because Epstein, quote, stole workers away from me, unquote.
I never had the privilege of going to his island, and I did turn it down, but a lot of people in Palm Beach were invited to his island. In one of my very good moments, I turned it down.
Oklahoma's superintendent of public instruction is facing scrutiny for screening explicit images of nude women in his office television during a meeting of the Oklahoma Board of Education. Ryan Walters previously faced backlash for promoting Bibles endorsed by President Trump on Oklahoma public school students. A third whistleblower has stepped forward with evidence that federal judicial nominee Emil Bovee lied to senators during his confirmation hearing last month. Staffer Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Chuck Grassley met Monday with lawyers for the whistleblower. This follows two prior whistleblower complaints alleging that while serving as a senior Justice Department official, Bovee ordered subordinates to ignore judicial orders that undermined Trump's agenda. Despite those complaints, North Carolina Republican Senator Tom Tillis said Monday his yes vote remains unchanged, likely giving Bovee enough support for his confirmation. Bovee is Donald Trump's former personal criminal defense attorney, nominated to a lifetime appointment on the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. A panel of federal judges in Albany, New York, has declined to appoint President Trump's interim U.S. attorney for the Northern District of New York to a permanent position. Monday's announcement means the 120-day interim appointment of John Sarcone III will expire unless Trump nominates him again. During his brief tenure, Sarcone retaliated against the Albany Times Union for reporting that he listed a boarded-up residence as his home address and accused an undocumented immigrant of trying to kill him, a claim refuted by surveillance video. Meanwhile, federal courts in New Jersey have halted criminal trials and grand jury proceedings amidst questions about Trump's appointment of his former personal attorney, Alina Habba, to serve as acting U.S. attorney. Habba had been serving as interim U.S. attorney until her appointment was due to expire last week when a panel of district judges selected veteran New Jersey prosecutor Desiree Grace to replace her. But Trump's Justice Department quickly fired Grace and named Habba as her replacement, setting off confusion about whether she's disqualified from holding the job. Trump has formally nominated only a quarter of the U.S. attorneys who serve in 85 federal districts. And the director, Christopher Nolan, is facing criticism for shooting his upcoming film, The Odyssey, in the Western Sahara city of Dakhla, which remains under occupation by Morocco. Local activists and the organizers of Fi Sahara, the Western Saharan International Film Festival, warn the production normalizes Morocco's repression of the indigenous Sahrawi people who faced torture and forced disappearances after holding nonviolent protests. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The worst case scenario of famine is currently playing out in the Gaza Strip. That's the dire warning issued today by the world's leading hunger monitor. This comes as the official death toll in Gaza has topped 60,000, but that's widely viewed to be a vast undercount. At least 147 Palestinians, including 88 children, have starved to death. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has denied there's any starvation in Gaza, but on Monday, President Trump contradicted Netanyahu's claim.
We can save a lot of people. I mean, some of those kids are, that's real starvation stuff. I see it. And you can't fake that.
In related news, a group of at least 21 U.S. senators has written to Secretary of State Marco Rubio, urging the U.S. to stop funding the shadowy U.S. and Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which was created to take over aid deliveries in Gaza, replacing the United Nations. Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen is the lead author of the letter. He appeared on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday and said the aid sites have been turned into death traps.
American taxpayers should not be spending one penny to fund this private organization backed by mercenaries and by the IDF that has become a death trap. Over 1,000 people have died from being shot and killed as starving people crowd to try to get food at just these four sites.
We're joined now in Raleigh, North Carolina, by Anthony Aguilar, a whistleblower who worked as a subcontractor in Gaza as part of the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid delivery operation. He resigned from his job with UG Solutions after witnessing Palestinians being fatally shot as they sought food at aid sites. Anthony Aguilar is a retired lieutenant colonel who served for 25 years in the U.S. Army Special Forces as a Green Beret. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us on Democracy Now! Can you start off by talking about your experience in Gaza and telling us exactly what you saw?
Thank you. It's an honor to be here and to share this story. I do not call this my story. I call this the story of the oppressed, the story of the Palestinians in Gaza who are dying at the hands of starvation and violence. What I witnessed in Gaza, I can only describe as a dystopian, post-apocalyptic wasteland. We, the United States, are complicit. We are involved, hand in hand, in the atrocities and the genocide that is currently undergoing in Gaza. For anyone who says that there is no starvation or mass hunger, or that not only are we at the precipice, but we have stepped over the line of wide-scale famine, to anyone who says that that's not happening, shame on you. Shame on you. It's inhumane. What I witnessed in Gaza at all four distribution sites, I didn't just go to one for a photo op. I didn't go to one to watch a distribution and then say, yes, this looks great. I spent days on end in Gaza at all four distribution sites, at Karim Shalom, where the aid is loaded for distribution, and at both operation centers that control the daily convoys, logistics, operations, and distribution for the four sites. What I saw on the sites, around the sites, to and from the sites, can be described as nothing but war crimes, crimes against humanity, violations of international law. This is not hyperbole. This is not platitudes or drama. This is the truth. I break that down by what I would describe as the sites themselves. I spoke to Senator Van Hollen last week, and we had a very frank discussion on the status of the sites and what's at these sites. The sites have not only become death traps, they were designed as death traps. All four distribution locations were intentionally, deliberately constructed, planned, and built in the middle of an active combat zone. Some may argue, well, all of Gaza is a war zone. That may be true, but there are parts of Gaza that are determined to be active, operational combat zones where Israeli defense forces are operating. Those sites were built in the middle of those areas, intentionally. It's not by accident. That in and of itself, to designate humanitarian distribution sites to service an unarmed, starving population, to build them deliberately in an active combat zone, is a violation of the Geneva Convention protocols. It's a violation of humanitarian law. And in my opinion, it's a violation of humanity in general. The sites, not only where they were built, all four sites around the perimeter and the roads leading in and out are barricaded by razor wire. Not barbed wire, not concertina wire that we use in warfare for obstacle obstruction or for paths. Razor wire. Geneva Conventions specifically prohibit the use of razor wire to restrict areas that civilians are servicing, hospitals, water points, food distribution points. And we're using it. Not only did the IDF provide it for us to use it on the sites, we, UG Solutions, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, asked for it specifically. Razor wire is designed to maim and kill. And we're using that to channelize and herd, if you will, thousands of unarmed, starving civilians. That's a war crime. The actions on the sites, escalation of force, no standard operating procedures to dictate that, no rules of engagement provided to the armed contractors on the ground. The indiscriminate use of force, lethal and non-lethal, against unarmed civilians. I want to make that clear. We aren't there on the distribution sites defending ourselves against Hamas. We are using indiscriminate force, targeting civilians, escalation of force that goes far beyond the measures of appropriate against an unarmed, starving population. The equipment that we were issued, fully automatic weapons, which in and of itself is not a violation of protocol. However, we were issued M855 green-tipped ammunition. That's important because green-tipped ammunition is a steel-jacketed copper round that's specifically designed to penetrate armor. It's designed to kill. It's designed to shoot through reinforced objects to kill someone on the other side of it. That's what all the UG Solutions contractors are equipped with right now in country. Everyone carries a standard basic load of 210 rounds of M855 armor-piercing military combat ammunition. Why would anyone need that, even if to defend themselves defend their lives against an unarmed population? It's inappropriate. That in and of itself, that action there is a war crime. I'd call the status of us being in the country. Every UG Solutions contract American, U.S. citizens in Israel that are armed with fully automatic weapons in Gaza as we speak today, right now, and have been since the 26th of May. We are in the country on a B2 entry visa as tourists. We're in the country as tourists. So if a family member wanted to go to Israel to visit Jerusalem, they would enter Israel on a tourist visa. That's the legal status that armed American citizens are in Gaza right now with the authority to use hostile force against an unarmed civilian on a tourist visa. That is a violation of humanitarian international law, period. The things that I just described are not just opinions, they're facts. The sites were designed to lure, bait, aid, and kill. The food that we distribute, nowhere near enough. To Mr. Johnny Moore, shame on you for celebrating 92 million meals delivered into Gaza. Shame on you. It's a very simple equation. 92 divided by 2.2 million people, divided by 3 million or 3 meals a day. That's what GHF proclaims. We've been distributing aid since the 26th of May. 26th May to now the 29th of June. 64 days of continuous distribution. And we've only managed to distribute 92 million meals. When you break that down, again, it's a simple equation. That's 14 days of meals. So out of 64 days, we've provided 14 days of meals to the entire population in the enclave of Gaza. That's inhumane. That would be like saying that you only eat every fourth day. You only eat on Thursday and you only eat on Monday. And to say that that's humanitarian? So to anyone that says that that's enough or not even close to enough, the narrative of GHF needs help to do the rest, you don't need help because you're not anywhere close to where we need to be. The fact is the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is not trained, equipped, manned, or staffed to run humanitarian aid and humanitarian assistance of this magnitude. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation needs to be defunded, shut down, and the United Nations needs to be allowed back in full scale, supported by the United States, resourced, helped. Instead of giving the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation $60 million, use that $60 million to support the United Nations mechanism to get 400 sites back to operating, to feed 2.1 million people every day. That was the capacity of the United Nations. So what I saw in Gaza, to me, concerns me as an American. What we are doing in Gaza in being complicit with what the Israeli Defense Forces are doing is un-American. I didn't come forward to talk because I want to disregard the struggle and the fight. I stand with Israel against Hamas in their atrocities. The world stands with Israel against Hamas in their atrocities. No one would argue that October 7th wasn't atrocious. But if we as a nation, the United States and Israel, our closest, one of our closest allies, if we go down the road of saying we're doing what Hamas did and saying that that's okay, we are losing our humanity and we cannot go down that road. It's un-American. It's not in line with our values. 2 months ago, I hung up my uniform after 25 years of service to this nation. I didn't hang up my oath. I swore an oath to the Constitution. I didn't swear an oath to the president, to the Congress, to a boss, to a contract, to a paycheck. I swore an oath to the Constitution of the United States of America. And that Constitution is underlined in American values, dignity, respect, respect for human life. Right now, America is on a dangerous road. And if we don't stop now, end this, and back the humanitarian aid process that should be going into Gaza, shame on us. Un-American. I'm going to make sure the truth is known.
Anthony Aguilar is a retired Lieutenant Colonel, Green Beret. As he said, 25 years of service in the U.S. military, was awarded the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star in combat in 2005. How did you come to work at the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation? How were you recruited? Who were you exactly working for? Are you considered a U.S. government employee? Were you?
I was not considered a U.S. government employee. I was specifically hired as an independent subcontractor under UG Solutions, which held this subcontract under the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, specifically for the armed security and protection of the aid. I was contacted by UG Solutions on the 13th of May. They were specifically looking for recently retired military personnel who had special operations background. So I was contacted by them for that reason and asked if I would be interested in joining UG Solutions on this operation.
The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has dismissed your testimony, Anthony, accusing you of making false claims with no basis in reality. The GHF said, quote, "It should be emphasized that Mr. Aguilar was employed as a subcontractor and was fired over a month ago for inappropriate behavior. Following the dismissal, we received threats that unless he was reinstated, action would be taken against us, raising questions regarding the motivation behind his interviews. We also have evidence that he likely forged documents and presented misleading videos to promote his false narrative." Again, this is the accusation of the GHF. Can you respond to what they've said and talk about the videos that they're talking about?
What I find interesting about stating that the claims I make have no basis in reality, I provided videos. Those videos have been analyzed in their metadata and geolocation. In fact, UG Solutions themselves posted one of my videos on their press release website showing the exact same thing, stating, here's the whole story. Simply just showing what the video showed with UG Solutions contractors shooting at civilians. It's outlandish. Back to the question of me being fired or not. When I was, the short period of time that I was on contract, 41 days I was on contract. In that short period of time, UG Solutions promoted me twice, gave me a pay raise